petition number 21117, Reel 2.
Albert Gregory, Reel 2.
So this aircraft, in the case that I'm referring to, there was no sign of any IFF identification. So of course we immediately assumed correctly that it was a German aircraft. So we had a go. And as far as we were concerned, we saw sufficient to claim the aircraft as being destroyed. As it was over England, it was over Sussex. It was later confirmed. So it was our one kill that night. But very shortly after that, I was posted from 219 Squadron onto Boston's for night intruder work.
How did you feel about that?
Just took it, no problem, accepted it. And we were flying from Ford and Tangmere in Sussex on these Bostons. And we were on night intruders, which meant going over France and Belgium, go 0 feet across the channel, and just look out for anything. We were directed initially from the ground to go to a particular area, say in France. And then we were left to our own devices. Anything that was moving, you have a go. Railway yards, activity on roads, other aircraft, airfields. We were doing over there exactly what the Germans were doing over here.
And this was a different squadron?
23 Squadron.
About when were you posted to that squadron?
About 1941.
I think from your logbook it looks like 7th of December 1941.
That's probably right. Without me referring to my logbook, I couldn't give you an exact date. But with that squadron, I did 32 operational flights over France with the same pilot, who was the flight commander and squadron commander. We got involved many times.
And his name?
His name was squadron leader B.R. O.B. Hoare, H-O-A-R-E. He'd been on night intruders before I got there. He was a highly respected night intruder ace.
What was he like to work with?
Very good. At that time, I was a warrant officer. I'd been promoted from sergeant to flight sergeant, from flight sergeant to warrant officer. And I was a warrant officer on that squadron. And I did all my night intruders. I think on that squadron, I did 32 with the same pilot.
What type?
I was the wireless operator air gunner. But I was only allowed to receive and not transmit for security. We'd have a different code every night going off for instructions. That was printed on rice paper in case we were shot down over the other side, so they could eat the rice paper and the Germans would not get any information, or they couldn't crack any, decode anything. But I was only allowed to receive a message if any message was going to come over. It could be for diverting from one area to another, or to return to base for various reasons, weather, etc. The message, if it was going to be sent to me, was only about 8 words a minute, very slow, which to make sure that I received it, because I couldn't reply. Excuse me, and acknowledge the fact that I had received it. On certain occasions, I'd get instructions to return to base, and I'd tell my pilot, we've got to go back, return to base for some reason or other. I'd say the reasons would vary. Weather, more often than not. The weather would get worse. So So it was decided it would be too dangerous for us to continue. On a number of occasions, but not all occasions, according to how the pilot felt, he used to say to me, when I told him that we'd got to return to base, he used to say to me, "You didn't bloody well hear that." And I say, "Well, I did." I said, "And we've got to go back to base." And he says, "Look," he says, "I'm the flight commander." Then later he was the squadron commander. He says, "I'll do what I want to do." He says, "They don't know whether you've received that message or not because you can't reply." And if he decided that he was going to carry on, I, of course, set up to decide and tell an untruth when I got back that I'd not received the message. Because I could not acknowledge it while flying. But he was a wonderful pilot. Wonderful man.
Did you ever feel unsafe with him?
No, never. Just took it as it came and went.
From your logbook, I see that on the 28th of December 1941, you've put intruder Bethune Railway Yards bombed.
Yes.
Do you recollect that?
No. I can't particularly recollect that one. But this is it. We'd be sent to various places over France, mainly, looking for railway yards where there was long trains communicating from one place to another, or convoys on roads, or airfields where there was German aircraft activity. And we just have to get involved, staff the airfield, try and hit their aircraft that was sitting on the ground, avoid their ACAC. But we just got stuck in and that was it, had a go. And by the time the pilot decided that was enough, turn around and come back. Fortunately, we got back on every occasion.
Another occasion, this is the 29th of January, I think 1942. It says, "Rhubarb, Tangmere Dinard, owing to 10/10 low cloud, turn back at Granville, no bombs dropped."
Yeah, we used to carry four 250-pound bombs, or two 500s. We were classed as a fighter bomber. And we always, getting over the other side, would always get rid of the bombs. And we, if we got involved with any aircraft, of course, I was involved with my turret, and the pilot would have his forward-firing guns.
And the meaning of rhubarb?
To be quite honest, and I must be honest, I can't remember. There were so many different code words, leaflet dropping, and things like that. But the word rhubarb, I'm sorry, to be quite honest, I can't remember.
And then another occasion, this is February the 11th, 1942, you put intruder operations Dinard, bombed flare path, hits observed on east-west runway.
Again, the particular flight, I can't remember. But that is what happened, according to my logbook.
And another entry here, 26th of February, 1942, you put flying in cooperation with FIU for testing flash flares. What's FIU?
Fighter Interception Unit.
What were flash flares?
For lighting up the sky. If it was a pitch dark night and they wanted to sort of try and verify anything around them, they're similar to like a very light.
So you were going to places like Saint Valery, Dinard, Caen, and places like that in France?
Northern France, just over the French border. We would take off from Tangmere or Ford, wherever we were operating from, in Sussex, and we'd fly at 0 feet over the channel to avoid their radar. And literally, my pilot would have to pull back the stick, the stick to climb, to get over the French coast. And we remained nearly all the time at a very low altitude. Mainly, of course, if it wasn't a very moonlight night, we'd be as low as possible to try and look for a target. But never at any time while over France did we attain any height. We were always low flying. And then by the time the pilot decided that was it, done enough, we'd turn around and fly back again at 0 feet across the channel. But as I say, the Germans were doing exactly the same over here. They were attacking our airfields, our railway yards. They were doing just the same as what we were doing over there.
Would you ever run into enemy aircraft on an intruder raid?
Oh, frequently. Yeah, frequently. But we had more problems with the ground ACAT, the ground fire from the Germans and searchlights. But we just generally get stuck in, have a go, and we were lucky to get away with it, turn around and come back.
Which?
I did, as I say, with that particular pilot on that squadron, 32 intruder flights. But I think the pilot that I flew with, he did about 80 odd in his career in total, starting before I joined him and after I left. While I was with that squadron, he called me into the office one day and he said, "Have you ever thought of having a commission?" I said, "No, never given it a thought." He says, "Well, if you want a commission, I can get you a commission." He said, "But you must realise that," he says, "at the moment you're a warrant officer in the NCO's mess, and you're the top dog in that mess, amongst other warrant officers." He says, "And if you get a commission, you'll be an acting pilot officer, and you'll be a nobody in the officer's mess. And you'll also be on less money." So he said, "Do you want a commission?" So I said, "Well, if you think that it's a good idea and you think I can get it, we'll go ahead with it." So I was married to a Derby girl who I knew before the war in August 1942 as a warrant officer. And while I was on leave getting married as a warrant officer, my commission came through. So from then on I was an acting pilot officer. My pay went down from what it was as a warrant officer. It wasn't until I was about a flying officer that I started getting more money. I was then posted onto a central gunnery leader's course.
Just before you go on to that, coming back to the German aircraft that you ran into on intruder raids, did you ever get into fights with them?
Yes, but more often than not, not a lot in the air. More often than not, it was the main trouble that we had was from their ground fire. And I think you'll see that in the book there's one occasion where we claimed a couple of aircraft that we considered that we'd damaged or destroyed on the ground. But it was difficult at any time, of course, to prove that what we were claiming was true. It was only our word for it. And there was no way of it being sort of substantiated. But most occasions, when we went over, we were always involved with activity.
Yes, there's an entry in your logbook which says, 2nd of April, intruder, Evreux, factory at Jouzier bombed. Approximately 15 enemy aircraft seen at Evreux and Conches, 2 Dornier 217s attacked and damaged.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the...
That's the particular one that's in my mind at the moment.
Well, that appears to be in April the 2nd, 1942.
But by the time I'd done these 32 trips or so with this same pilot, Vardan was a squadron commander of 23 Squadron. I was sent on this central gunnery leaders course. And I think I was on that about a month.
What was the purpose of that course?
To be a gunnery leader was to be the main gunnery operator on any particular squadron. To be the senior air gunner. You'd always have a senior pilot, you'd have a senior observer, or a senior air gunner, according to what flying you were doing. And the course lasted, I can't remember exactly, but probably a month, 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks. I was then posted back to 605 Squadron, again on intruders, Bostons. And I did a further 10 intruder flights with that squadron.
Where were they based?
In the same area, Ford and Tangmere. And at the end of that time, they were trying to insist that I had to do a ground job, because I'd done so much operational flying. Night flying with the 219 Squadron, and then with the intruder squadrons. I was told I'd got to come off operations and go on a night on a day ground job, but I didn't want that. I was quite happy to continue flying. So they said, right, well, you'll have to go on squadrons that are what they considered would be less operational than the ones I'd already been on. So I was posted onto Air Sea Rescue Squadrons.
Before we go on to that, in your logbook we should say that it says for July 1942, 41 Central Gunnery Course.
That's it.
At Sutton Bridge.
That's the course I'm referring to.
And it seems that you were dealing with Wellingtons at that time.
Well, that was the aircraft that they were using at that training school. Apart from going on courses, I was never at any time during the war, from the beginning to the end, on a desk job or a ground, or any ground non-operational job. I was on squadrons from the beginning of the war to the end. I was on a total of about, during the war, six different squadrons.
And the entry in your logbook for 605 Squadron at Ford says that you started there 14th of September 1942.
Yes. Well, I did, I think it was 10 intruder flights with that squadron. And then this situation came where I was to leave and go on a non-operational job, which I didn't want. So then I was posted to the Air Sea Rescue Squadrons, which was the first place I went to, was RAF Valley. Anglesey, 275 Squadron, and they were flying with Ansons, Walrus, Sea Otters, and Lysanders. And we were operating over the Irish Sea.
How was air sea rescue work done?
We could be sent off on patrols, going up and down the coast, around off the Irish coast, off the Welsh coast in the Irish Sea, or we could be on the ground on readiness and be sent off to a specific point in the Irish Sea, because some aircraft would probably be ditched, or there'd be a loss of some sort, either aircraft or sea vessels. And we had the Anson aircraft for flying, for searching. But if we got a specific place more often than not to go to, we'd fly in the Walrus, which was an amphibious aircraft, which was based on land, but we could land on the sea. So if we were required or at all at any time to try and get anybody out of the sea that maybe ditched, we could land on the sea, pick them up, fly off again, and land back on base.
And what were your jobs in the aircraft?
Mainly on lookout, if we're on searching, And of course, assisting if we're required to help anyone that was on that we found on the sea. I did a considerable number of flying on that, what we call scrambles.
Any incidents you remember?
No, there's no particular incident that sticks in my mind. Again, it was just another routine job, and I was quite happy to get on with it.
Did you actually rescue people, though?
We got into situations where if there was an AC rescue land boat launched from the land, and we would direct the boat to where the bodies were, if there were any bodies around. But only on a very few occasions did we actually pick anybody up. We often found signs of where something had sort of crashed into the sea, and all that sort of thing. Or we'd see life boats in the water that were empty. From there, from Valley Anglesey, I was posted onto another squadron, and we were stationed in Suffolk, where the Germans had got involved with their flying fortresses.
The Americans?
The Americans had got involved with their flying fortresses. They were based in Suffolk, and the squadron that I was on, 278 Squadron, we were posted to one of these stations in Suffolk, which was totally an American station. They were doing daylight bombing, and we'd be there available if there were any of their aircraft or anybody in the sea off the Suffolk coast. They were doing total day bombing, and we were just an air sea rescue unit attached to them. And we were there at that place, we were in what you call Doodle Bug Alley, where all the V1s, the doodlebugs, used to come in across London into the Suffolk area.
How close did you come to V1s?
Regularly, every day, virtually. As long as you could hear the engine going, this shattering roar of the engine of the V1, you were quite happy. But if the engine suddenly stopped, you'd immediately dive for cover, and because the V1 would be, the engine would stop and it would be coming down straight away. As long as you could hear the engine of the V1, this shattering roar, you were quite happy because you know it was not going to come down into where you were.
Would you come close to them in the air?
No, I personally was never close to them. The RAF Spitfires and Hurricanes were involved with trying to divert them. They'd actually tip the wing of the V1 to alter its course. They'd have to be very careful about attacking it, because if they hit it and it exploded, they'd run into the explosion and their own safety would be considered very bad. But the Spitfires and Hurricanes were mainly involved with trying to divert the course that the V1s were on. But as far as activity, it was a very active area for V1s, and almost daily we would hear them.
Was air sea rescue work on the East Coast just the same as in the Irish Sea, or were there any differences?
The same situation. Just available if wanted for any specific point where it was considered the any of the American crew were in the sea, or we'd be told we'd be airborne, anticipating the return of these American bombers, so that we would be available if wanted. I was posted from there, same squadron, finished up the end of the war at Thorney Island, which is just off Southampton.
Doing air sea rescue work?
Still doing air sea rescue work. The same aircraft. Walrus and Sea Otters.
Do you remember rescuing anybody on the East Coast? No.
Nope.
South Coast?
We personally didn't pick anybody up. For interest, one of our Wallace aircraft was told about a dinghy of a Flying Fortress that was in the sea, and they found it. They landed on the sea. This is another aircraft of our squadron. They landed on the sea, and they picked up, from memory, about 12, because the Flying Fortress in those days would have a crew of 10 or 12 people. They picked up the whole crew that were in dinghies. They picked up the whole crew and crammed them into this walrus. But of course they couldn't get airborne because they were overloaded. So they had to taxi back to the beach and just run up the beach. But that was a very interesting situation regarding one of our aircraft. Because according to this friend of mine who was on this aircraft, he said he could always remember the Americans saying, "Why the hell can't we get this goddamn aircraft airborne?" And the friend of mine, this other wireless operator air gunner, said, "Well, if half of you want to get off, we'll get airborne. We're overloaded." They couldn't get airborne. They had to taxi back on the sea and put the wheels down and taxi up on the beach.
How do you feel now about having served in the Second World War in the RAF aircrew?
It's just, to be quite honest, I never at any time regretted being in it. I never felt any fear. As I said earlier on, this is mainly because there was sort of nothing personally involved. To be quite honest, I think I enjoyed it. Throughout the war, I was stationed in England, but flying all over the place. I actually flew into and operated from in England, over 90 airfields, 90 different airfields. When in late 1945, I was demobbed. I wanted to stay on, but it came with a time where there were no longer the urgency and anxiety of war carrying on. So it was a matter of reducing the state and size of the forces. So I was a flight lieutenant, and I was demobbed. I came back to Derby and went in my old pre-war mundane job as a bread delivery man. Just took it on, accepted it. Didn't think anything about it. No, regarding the chains, it just, one of those things that happened. I was sorry that I'd not been allowed to stay into the Air Force, but realised the situation. But after about 18 months, I received a letter from the Air Ministry asking if I'd go back. Because by then, the Malayan campaign was on. The terrorists in the jungles of Malaya, the army was fully occupied fighting these terrorists in Malaya. And of course, the Air Force had got rid of so many trained aircrew that they were short of people in my situation, with my trade as a wireless operator. So they asked me if I'd go back on a short service commission. I said to my wife, "What about it?" And she agreed. At that time, we'd got two young children. My daughter was born in 1945. My son was born in 1947. And she said, "Yeah, why not? You'll be happy back into the Air Force." So I went back. I did refresher courses somewhere in Norfolk, getting back into my speed for wireless operating. I went to a Coastal Command course for Dakotas at Lynham, doing a Jump Master's course for dropping supplies to the troops in the jungle and all that sort of thing. And then I was immediately posted to Singapore, Changi, number 52 Squadron, Dakotas. And there were three squadrons there involved with total co-op with the army, dropping supplies and troop carrying in the jungles of Malaya.
And your duties?
My duties was wireless operator and loadmaster.
What's a loadmaster?
Well, we used to carry equipment and supplies in the aircraft. We'd fly with the doors off, no doors on the Dakota, no parachutes. I never at any time had a parachute when I was flying in on Dakotas. And if we were sent off to do supply dropping in the jungle, we'd load up with the supplies, have no doors on the aircraft, and I'd be responsible for getting the supplies out of the Dakota aircraft onto the dropping zone in the jungle. The pilot would be flying at just treetop height, looking for this DZ, this dropping zone of the army, who were in the, they cut